consider employee selection to be a short-term process of making a long-run decision. Now, one of my favorite quotes about employee selection came from a producer who told me once. He said, "I don't worry about hiring a great employee and having him leave in 3 months. I worry about hiring a terrible employee and having him stay 30 years. Another guy told me, he said, "It's better to have a vacancy than to wish you had a vacancy." And so again, the more time we can take during this process, I think the better off we are. I really, truly believe that. But here's the problem. Here's the kicker. Here's the catch-22. When do we hire people? When we have a ton of extra time? Or when we're so busy we can't humanly catch up? Now, here's where it really gets tricky. What's faster, doing something yourself or training a new person to do it? Doing it yourself. So we're hiring people at a time when we're so incredibly busy we don't have a spare second, and then we're supposed to take the time to train them? So do we take the time to train them? Not thoroughly. And then, lo and behold, 3 months later, they're not working out. I wonder why. So it's a vicious, vicious, vicious cycle. I think this right here is part of the way that we stop that. We stop it through going through some sort of a hurdles process. Now, we've all probably seen the Olympics where people have to clear the first hurdle and then clear the second and then clear the third. Same exact thing applies when we talk about employee selection. Written applications can very well be a first hurdle. I had an actual producer email me right before Christmas. They were looking, it's a fairly, they're not a huge operation, but they're a nice-sized family operation in my area. And they're a wonderful family. They've got a great reputation within the community. And they had they'd advertised for a job, just a typical kind of newspaper advertisement. They had, I believe, 64 applications for that job. And then, the reason they were calling me was their first hurdle was they had a written application. They had 64 phone calls, people interested in the job. To those 64 people, they sent the written application. Fill this out, send it back in the mail to us. From that, we'll decide who we want to interview or who we want to do, check references on and those types of things. Of those 64 applications that they sent out, how many do you guys think they got back? 5. Now, here's the question for you. And this was the question that they had. Was there something wrong with their written application? I looked it over. I didn't see anything wrong with it. Did the written application do its job? Yes. In my opinion, yes, it did. Because if you've got, 59 people out there who thought this job wasn't worth filling out this piece of paper, then maybe those aren't people you want working for you in the first place. Maybe those aren't people that we want to take the time and the energy and the effort to train, and we'd rather have some of these other people. And so they did the written application. Written application is where you get your basics. Do you have a CDL? Can you legally work in this country? All those types of things. Here's a piece of advice for you. If your job, if it's very important for your job that they be able to read and write in English, then I would highly recommend you make them fill the written application out in front of you. They come in, they pick up an application, they fill it out. Because what happens, and again, this is only important if that's an important requirement of the job. But what happens if it is an important requirement of the job and they take the application home? Then maybe their third grade daughter is filling it out for them. And that's, again, many of our jobs, reading and writing isn't a requirement, but some of our jobs it is, and we want to make sure we test for that. Next, we get into things like written tests and oral tests and things like that. I think these are really important in positions where we expect the person to have a great deal of technical knowledge when they come to us. Here's something, I'm going to ask you all another pop quiz, but this is not something that there's a right answer to or a wrong answer to or anything like that. I just am genuinely curious about what you're going to answer here. Assuming that you're hiring for a position, like just kind of an entry-level, basic type of position that you have within your operation. Now, assume a person comes to you, and we're going to assume we're all CalCAP operations for the sake of uniformity here. Assume a person comes to you, they've They have great references, tremendously hard worker. They've just moved into the community because their spouse has gotten a job at the local community college or something like that. And so they're looking for a new job in the community. And they've got, what, like 10 years of experience working at another ranch in another state. And that person was just sad to see him go. Are we glad to see that person come in and apply for a job with us? You betcha. Okay? Now let's assume the second person that's applied for a job for us has never worked in the cattle industry before. They've worked in some other industries and have great references. They're hardworking. They're a go-getter. This is the type of person that's really enthusiastic, and you're excited about the opportunity to train them and get to know them a little better. All things being equal, they're about the same type of employee, but one has a lot of experience in your industry and one is totally green. Who do you hire? Who hires experience? Who hires somebody who's totally green? Okay, experienced people. Why do you hire experienced?
Know that they'll fit into the job. So, experience, you may not like it
either. Okay. You know that he likes the type of work, and you're not going to have to reinvent the wheel with him. Okay? First people who are going to hire somebody who's kind of green, why? You want them to do it your way. They don't come in wanting to be the boss. Ma'am, you were going to say?
You can train them the way you want them.
You can train them and you can pay them less, somebody in the back says. This is always fascinating to me. And there's no right or wrong way. Because let's face it, we need people with experience coming in our industry and we need people without experience coming into our industry. The most common reason that I hear for people wanting to hire the green employee is, and this is a direct quote from a dairy producer in New England, he said, "I don't want anybody else's bad habits on my farm." Now, I'm going to be doing the same presentation at the Western Dairy Management Conference in Reno in a few weeks, and I'm going to ask this question. I will be incredibly surprised if a single dairy producer wants the experienced person. Because that's an industry where they have very strict standard operating procedures. And it's, you know, it's very much like a factory in some senses. And so we do it this way, and if you don't do it this way, then we're going to have a problem type of thing. And so I'm very interested in that. But that's something to keep in mind. How much training do you want to do? If you feel like training someone, go with the green person. Train them to do it your way. If you don't have the time or the resources or the energy to train somebody and you want them to hit the ground running, that's okay. Do some of these practical tests. Do some of these written tests and oral tests. Figure out exactly how skilled they are. Because if a person comes to you and talks about what a great cowboy they are, is there a possibility they might not be that great a cowboy? Yeah, pretty good chance, I would say. And so how do we figure that out? How do we see if they can walk the walk and talk the talk? I think we do what we call a practical test. I am a huge, huge fan of the practical test. And what that means is we may sit down and interview you for 20 minutes and hear about your work experiences and your work philosophy and things. But then we're going to get up and we're going to go out to the lot, we're going to go to the barn, we're going to go to the pasture, and you're going to show me what you can do. I may set up an obstacle course. Here, I want you to go in through there and I want you to separate all the heifers and steers into two different pens. Some people are going to be able to do that lickety-split. Some people, you're going to have a bit of a catastrophe on your hands, and it's better to know that then, isn't it? And so doing something small, easy like that, because there are several different advantages to this. The first is you're going to have people who are not going to impress you during the interview. Remember my uncle, the mechanical genius? Sit down, interview him. You're not going to be impressed. I've known him my entire life. I've heard him say a grand total of about 7 words. Not a talker, a doer. He's not going to impress you during an interview. But take him into a shop where something's broken and let him fix it. He's going to have it flying. He's going to improve it 9 different generations above what it was when it started. And so you're not going to know that until you put him in that comfort zone environment. The next thing you're going to have there is you're going to have an opportunity to see a different side of that person. Also, you're going to have an opportunity to let your current employees participate, and that's incredibly key. I was talking with a husband and a wife who have traveled around the country and worked at a lot of different ranches, and they've got a lot of ranch experience, and they say, you know, whenever I hire on with a place, The number one key thing I look at is whether or not I'm allowed to interact with the current employees during the interview process. If they don't want me talking to the current employees, it always is a signal to me that they've got something to hide. And so go ahead and let your current employees set up the practical test and be involved in this in some kind of different way. The final thing there is references. Now, pop quiz, who here is a big fan of checking references? Okay? Has anybody ever had a disaster with checking references? Okay? Probably a little of both. When I was at Oklahoma State doing my undergraduate work, we had a position, a vacancy in the Career Services Division of the College of Agriculture, and I was the student representative to the selection committee. And we had a tremendous number of applicants. I think we had about 80 or so people apply for that job. We brought in 3 to interview. And one guy on paper looked great. I mean, I expected him to walk in with wings and a halo. He looked so good. His letters of reference were just glowing, and, oh, we'd hate to lose this person, and, oh, he's so great. And then the guy shows up, okay? And he's got mustard on his shirt, and he's kind of slouching during the interview, and he literally at one point called me honey. That went over really well. And, oh, this was really good. There was one of the girls on the committee who was Miss Oklahoma at the time. She's just a beautiful girl. She was an ag engineering major. So we're going around and we're telling our majors, and she says, I major in agricultural engineering. And this guy literally, I cannot believe he did this. He literally said, they let girls do that now. And all I can think is, this is the guy with the great letters of recommendation. And so obviously he didn't get the job, and he kind of became a campus joke after that. But I kept wondering, how and why did that happen? Well, then come to find out, he's had this job at this little junior college for forever, and they have been trying to get rid of him for years. And so every job that comes down the pike, they write these glowing letters of recommendation, just praying somebody will take the bait. And so keep that in mind. Another word of warning, I'm going on and on about references. Am I boring anybody yet? Okay, if I start boring you, let me know. Another thing about references is, let's assume you're hiring somebody from out of your community, 3 counties away, different state away, what have you. You call a person up. You're looking for references on Joe. Hi, you know, Joe Smith has just applied for a job with me. He listed you as a reference. Oh, I remember Joe. Joe's the best employee I ever had. I never had anybody who was as much a self-starter as Joe. He didn't wait around looking for me to tell him what to do. He was out there doing it. I never had to worry about Joe finding things to keep himself busy. He was just going and working all the time. Well, that sounds pretty great. Who here wants to hire Joe? Yeah, we'll take Joe. Now, I'm going to call Joe's other reference. Guy he worked for before this last guy. Hi, sir. My name's Sarah Fogelman. I'm looking at hiring a former employee of yours, Joe Smith. Oh, I remember Joe. Well, what can you tell me about Joe and your experiences with him? Well, I had to let Joe go. He said, I just couldn't trust him. He was always off on his own, and he never took directions from me, and I just never knew what was going on with him, and you just really couldn't trust him. Are we talking about the same guy? Yeah. Is one reference good and one reference bad? Yeah. Now, what's the difference between those 2 references? Is Joe different? No. The employers have different personalities. If you talk to one guy and he talks about somebody being easygoing and carefree, and you talk to the next guy and he says, man, that's the biggest slob I ever knew, it might help to know if the second guy is a neat freak, right? And so when we call up references, I think it's a good thing to do. I do. I think it's a good thing to do. But I would never hire somebody solely based on a reference, because you don't, unless it's the person you know. If it's a friend, if it's somebody you know through this organization or somebody that you know from something else and they say, man, I wish I hadn't let that guy go, then you probably want to hire him. But if it's somebody, some stranger on the end of the phone, we might want to take their words with a grain of salt. Questions about this? Okay, moving on. Step 4, provide proper training. And we've already said that, let's face it, if we had oodles of spare time, then chances are we wouldn't be hiring somebody in the first place, would we? Chances are we wouldn't be hiring somebody in the first place if we had time to train them. Starting off by teaching newcomers the language. Show them where the sausage drawer is. Allow plenty of time. Here's a question for you. How much time do we currently allow somebody for training? 2 weeks? A month? 3 weeks? Anybody here have a formal training program that lasts any longer than 3 months? Okay. I propose, whether we could call this a formal training program or not, but I would propose that we really need to consider a person new and consider a person in the training process for 365 days. Because let's consider this. Let's consider that we go home today and we hire somebody to start February 1st. The things that they're going to do in your operation on February 2nd, are they the same things they're going to be doing in August? No. Are they the same things they're going to be doing in December? Probably not. And so we're even, and that person, are they still new after they've been on the job for 8 months? Probably, I mean, they are, but we probably don't think of them as the new guy anymore at that point. So they've been around for 8 months. They've seen all summer, but they haven't seen a winter yet. And so we need to make sure that with those new people, that we allow them plenty of time. And we're always asking ourselves the question, have they seen this yet? Have we had a freeze since he's been here? Have we had calving season since they've been here? Have we planted wheat since they've been here? What have you? Be aware of business and community adjustments. How many of you live in really, really, really rural areas? If I am an outsider and I move into your community, is it going to be maybe a little bit of an adjustment? Whose responsibility is that to help that person adjust? Now, does this mean that we have to take them in and, you know, bake them cookies every night and stuff like that? No. But it might be nice to say, you know what? Everybody in town goes to the Founders Day Rodeo. I'd like for you to come with me and I'm going to introduce you to some folks. Can that go a long, long way? Yep. What we were aiming for in that first month of having that person be employed for us is for them to be thinking, man, I'm looking forward to next month. I'm looking forward to being here. I'm looking forward to getting the hang of this job. I'm looking forward to working with these people. I can see myself having a career here. That's what we want. And if we just throw a person out in the deep end to see if they can swim, chances are they're going to start swimming for sure, aren't they? We need to make sure that they adjust to the business and to the community. Finally there, we need to remember that everyone needs training. Again, I don't care if I'm hiring the green person or if I'm hiring the experienced person or if I'm just moving somebody from one position to another position. We need to remember that everybody needs training. How many of you have somebody in your business who's been working for you for more than, say, 5 years? That's wonderful. Give yourselves a hand. That's really, really good. Now, one of the questions that I get sometimes is I'll be talking to a producer and they'll say, you know, I've got a great employee. He's been with me 3 months. I've never been as excited about an employee as I am with this kid. He's got to be a great, great employee. Has anybody felt like that before with somebody? How long does that feeling last? Because one of the most disheartening things I see is I'll see that same producer a year later. How's that great employee working out for you? He's okay. He's doing okay. He's fine. He's good. He's a good employee. I see him a year after that. How's that great employee working out for you? Oh, he's kind of been in a funk lately. He's kind of gotten real moody on me or something. Now, what's happened to that employee from the 3-month mark to the 2-year mark? I'm sorry? Burned out. That could very, very well would be a part of it. Another part is they might be going through something personal at home that weighs on all of us. Another thing, and I think this is probably really pretty common, is if we've got one of those rising star employees, and I know they don't come out around every day, but when we get them, this can happen. We've got a rising star employee, started off gangbusters, just burning through everything I would ever let him do. And then what happens 2 years later is the challenge is gone. The challenge is gone. I've already mastered everything I've been doing for the last 2 years, and from this point on, it's just the same old, same old, same old, over and over again. Now, in my hometown of Locust Grove, Oklahoma, the local auto mechanic is a guy named Pork Roland. Now, you know you're from a small town in Oklahoma if your mechanic's name is Pork Roland. And so Pork is this kind of bastion of industry there in Locust Grove. And he's this really colorful character guy. And of course, Pork's, no women are ever allowed in Pork. So when I go home, Dad has to take my car down. And so Dad was took my car down to Pork's not long ago. And he said, you know, you're never going to believe this, girls, but Pork is adding on. This is big news in Locust Grove, Oklahoma, that Pork's adding on to the shop. And he says, he's going to start selling tires out of there. And we're like, well, really? Pork is expanding and selling tires. He says, yeah. You know, Pork's got this old leather recliner that sits kind of in the corner of the shop, and it's being held together by duct tape and baling wire and everything. And he's getting older now, and he sits there, and he's got all these young guys working for him. And Dad said he was sitting there waiting on him to finish with my car. And he noticed that the back wall of the shop was covered in tires. And he said, Pork, I didn't realize you were in the tire business. And he said, yeah. I said, these boys, they kept getting on me about selling tires, about we needed to sell tires. We got to sell tires. Pork, why don't you let us sell tires? And he said, finally, I just got sick of it. And I said, if you guys want to sell tires, you sell tires, but I don't have anything to do with it. I don't want to see an invoice. I don't want to wait on a customer. I don't want to unload a truck. I don't want to do anything with it. You do it. Okay. They said, we'll do it. And so, you know, month goes by, 2 months goes by, 3 months goes by. Pretty soon, Pork's making more money off the tires than he's making off the rest of the shop combined. And he's telling my dad about this and bragging about it, and that's why we're adding on, he says. And you know the best part, Pork says? He says, I didn't have to get out of this chair. Guys, we have employees out there, I think a lot of us, that are just looking for the next big challenge. They're looking for the next big challenge. And so sometimes the best thing we can do for our employees is to sit on the bench. Now, I know that's not easy for a lot of us to do. I know a lot of us would probably rather have root canal than do that. But sometimes what we need to do is sit down in the chair and let our employees handle it. That's a tough thing to do, right, guys? But truly, deeply, if we've got those all-star employees that we think are on the verge of burning out, the single most important advice I can give you is challenge them. Give them a new Mount Everest to climb. Training. Give people a clear understanding of what it takes to be successful in the job. Give people the tools they need to do that job, the time they need to master those tools, and appreciation of all the roles in the business, and cross-train if possible. Very, very important stuff. Especially in our cow-calf types of operations, this isn't going to be as big a deal. But with our feedlots, with anybody who has a operation large enough where people can kind of get tunnel vision, I mix feed all day long. That's all I ever do is mix feed. I never feed a cow. I never pull a calf. I never treat anything. That's all I do is mix feed. Then how important are those other aspects of the operation to that person? Is it maybe does fixing the feed become a little less important if they never see the cows the feed is fed to? Yeah. And so the more we can cross-train, I think the better. And cross-train has a couple of other advantages. What happens when we're short-staffed if we've got people out there who are cross-trained? They can fill in a little bit, can't they? Maybe not full-time, but you can pinch hit if you have to. Another advantage, remember I was picking on the feedlot industry a little while ago, and I was talking about the differences, about how I've never been on a feedlot where the truck driving crew and the cowboy crew really 100% truly got along. Am I right with that? Now, what do you think's the problem there? Gates. Because the cowboy crew, they're going to go through and ride the pens, and they're going to pull out all the sick calves that need to go. And so they've got gates standing all open all over the place as they're herding calves around trying to get them to the hospital pens. Feed truck drivers, however, they're trying to get down those same alleys with their trucks. And lo and behold, those blankety-blank cowboys have let these gates standing in my way. You know the best thing I know to get that problem to go away? Cross-training. Let everybody do each other's job for a little while, and they have a much better appreciation of those jobs. Number 5 here, lay out the ground rules. We don't want to ever be in a position where it looks like we're making up the rules as we go along. I cannot overemphasize that enough. We never want to be in a position where it looks like we're making up the rules as we go along. True story. I hadn't been on the job 2 months, I think. I was doing a meeting in Manhattan. I was talking about employee compensation. And a farmer comes up to me after the meeting. He's a big wheat farmer in western Kansas. He's got about 9 employees. And he says, I've got a major compensation problem. He says, you know, I've got great employees. I trust them. I feel really lucky to have the employees that I've got. He said, and, you know, a couple of months ago, I decided that I really wanted to offer dental insurance for my employees. So I started calling around to all the insurance companies, and I found out that, you know, I could get dental insurance, but boy, it was going to be expensive. So instead, I told my employees, I said, go ahead, take your family to the dentist, bring me the bill, and I'll pay it. Does anybody see where this could go horribly wrong? Sure enough, 2 or 3 weeks before wheat harvest, his number one employee comes to him and says, oh, by the way, my daughter needs braces. Here's the first orthodontics bill. Talk about the proverbial rock and hard place. Either I reach into my pocket and I pull out a whole bunch of money I wasn't planning on pulling out, or I run the risk of ticking off my number one employee right before my busiest time of the year. Now, does this employer have a compensation problem? I would actually argue he has a communication problem, because he's done this right here. He's going to be making up the rules as he goes along. So I don't really care what benefits you offer. I don't care what your bonus package looks like. I don't care about any of that type of stuff. The most important thing is that we communicate what we mean by it. So don't just say, bring me the bill and I'll pay it. Say, bring me a bill up to $1,000 and I'll pay it, if $1,000 is the number that we have in the back of our mind. Don't say, take your family to get their teeth checked out, bring me the bill and I'll pay it. If I mean just take your family to get a basic dental cleansing at the dentist. No orthodontia, no fillings, no bridges, no nothing of that. So whatever we mean, we say it. The next thing there is we got to communicate that to those employees, and also I think we're better off if we allow those employees to have a voice when establishing those tools. Is it 11 o'clock already? Okay. To having a voice when establishing those tools, which means basically that those people, they kind of have our backs. There are two big advantages to that. Number one, employees are going to think about things that you wouldn't think about. They're going to see the little loopholes that maybe you wouldn't have seen. The second thing is an employee going to have more buy-in to something that they helped write themselves? You betcha. It's not, again, it goes from being your policy to being our policy, if they had a voice in establishing it. Step number 6, meet your employee's needs. This is our last step, and then hopefully we'll have time for a couple of questions. It's not about money, folks. Employee compensation is probably the single most common question that I get. But a compensation is never a factor of money. It's a factor of meeting your employees' needs. Now, granted, some people need money. But some people are like the bunch of employees that I met at a dairy farm in upstate New York. These guys were all, oh gosh, if any of them were over 22, I would be completely amazed. Whole bunch of boys working, milking cows 24 hours a day, living in a trailer house in the back part of the farm, you know, drinking Mountain Dew, thinking life is never going to get better than this. You know, these guys are loving their lives. And I asked one of them, there were probably 5 or 6 of them, I asked one of them, I said, you know, do you consider this a career? He thought about it for a long time. He said, well, you know, he said, I'll probably do this until I get married, which I thought was a pretty odd answer. And I said, really, until you get married? Why until you get married? And he said, well, when I get married, my wife will probably do my laundry. Okay, just keeps on getting weirder. Why does that pertain to whether or not this is a career or not? And he said, well, he said, you know, whenever I, you know, the lady who she and her husband own this farm. And I said, yeah. And he says, well, she does our laundry for us. Here we have an example, ladies and gentlemen, of a key workforce that is not about to go someplace else for more money because they're not about to start doing their own laundry. It's not about money. It's about meeting your employees' needs. What is something that you can give them they can't get anywhere else? What is something you can give them they can't get anywhere else? If you're employing somebody with kids, maybe you, if you're not busy one day, if you've got kind of a slow afternoon and you know for a fact that their child is playing in a softball game down the road, can you say, hey, go watch your kid play softball? Yeah, you can. If that guy was punching a time clock at the local manufacturing company, could he do that? Probably not. Is that important to some people? You bet, yes, ma'am.
Or better yet, go with them?
Exactly. Better yet, go with them. Show support of the family. Another big example, I don't know what it is about in other parts of the country, but in Kansas, where I live currently, hunting and fishing are big, big business. Is that true anywhere else? Big business. I can't believe it. I was actually doing a meeting in Osborne County, which isn't my territory that I typically cover, but it's out in the western part of the state. And they had a fee hunter come in and had killed a big 32-point buck, and Cabela's was going to pay $30,000 for that mount. Personally, I wouldn't give you $5 to haul it out of my house and take it to the dump. But evidently somebody thinks it's important. And so I have literally had farmers and ranchers tell me, they've actually told me, I don't deserve the employees that I've got. If it was just on money, I wouldn't be able to keep them. But my guys love to hunt, they love to fish. And they know if they don't work for me, they wouldn't have a place to do that. I can't believe it, but it's true. Sometimes it's a house to live in. Sometimes it's a truck to drive. Sometimes it's those prepaid phone calling cards I found for people who have employees that have families in other countries. That's a really big perk. Give them $20 worth of phone calls home. Oh my gosh, they'll love you forever. If we can give people things they can't get anywhere else, then chances are much, much greater that we're going to keep them. Flexible working hours. How many of you are employing young working mothers? If you aren't, you might want to think about it. Because that's probably one of the most up-and-coming agricultural workforces right there. Because a lot of us don't need those full-time people. We just need somebody to come in maybe from 10 to 2 every day and do a few things. They're looking for that job. And so think about that. What are the things that we can do that they can't get anywhere else? Why compensation is important for employers? Because it's something that we have to deal with. Employees, because compensation is ultimately not just a function of what they are paid, but of how they are valued. Everything about your compensation package sends a message, folks. It sends a message, and I'm not sure what other slides I have here. Okay, I'm going to finish with this slide here. Talk just very, very briefly about bonuses and why I call what I think about bonuses. Okay, let's use the hypothetical situation. And I don't know if anybody out there is doing this, but I'm betting some of you are. Let's say 2006 was a really, really good year in your operation. You made a lot of money, frankly, in 2006. You've got great employees. You like your employees. And so you're going through your books, you're thinking about your taxes, and you turn to your spouse and you say, you know what? Let's give everybody a $1,000 Christmas bonus. Who thinks that sounds like a good idea? You guys know that's a trick question. So let's say we write that $1,000 check, and sure enough, right before Christmas, we go up to all of our employees and we hand them that $1,000 check. Now, morale on your business is usually here. What does $1,000 out of the blue do to morale? Woo! Right? How long does it stay up here? About January 12th, about my birthday. It's down about right here. Now, hate to break it to you, but 2007 is not a good year. Prices are bad, yields are bad, weather's terrible. You don't make any money in 2007. But what do you start hearing mumblings of about November? What's that bonus going to be this year? Can't wait to get that bonus. My wife says we can take a trip as soon as that bonus check comes. Had you planned on giving a bonus in 2007? No. What do you figure out, though? I better give a bonus, or I'm going to have some really ticked off employees. But here's where it gets really bad. Last year, $1,000 got morale up to about here. Where does $1,000 get you this year? About halfway. If you want the same buzz, you better make it $1,500 or $2,000. That's why I like to call bonuses the crack cocaine of human resource management. Because it creates addicts. It takes a little bigger hit all the time to get the same kind of buzz. Now, the only reason this situation is wrong, in my opinion, is because that's a situation where the bonus wasn't earned, it was given. Bonuses should always be earned. They should never be given. What's the difference whenever I would just walk up to you, hi, here's $1,000. What string did I attach to that? Nothing. So what does my employee think about that? Hey, my boss is a nice guy. He gave me $1,000. Next year, if I don't give you $1,000, what does that mean? My boss is no longer a nice guy. That's what I like to call the because I'm a nice guy bonus. What happens instead if you say, oh my gosh, you know, this year our AI conception rates improved by 20%. Here's $1,000. What happens next year if they don't get $1,000? I better heat check cows a lot better next year, right? Now, is it okay for employees not to get a bonus if they got one the year before? You betcha. You absolutely betcha. A bonus is just that. It's something we don't bank on. It's something that we don't expect. I had an employee tell me once, he said, well, we don't really get a bonus. We just get 3 paychecks in December instead of 2. Has the bonus kind of gone out of that plan? Yeah. And so bonuses should be something that they work toward. It should be something that they earn. Last thing I'm going to tell you, and then we're going to take questions, is there's a difference between bonuses and appreciation gifts. Appreciation gifts can kind of be spontaneous. They can kind of be the because I'm a nice guy variety. And specifically, they should be given for something. Producer tells the example. He was lying in bed one night, his dairy farmer, and it was cold and windy, and you could just hear the wind and the snow blowing outside. And his wife texts him and says, just go get dressed, go down to the barn and check on things because I know you won't sleep until you do. And so he says, oh, she's probably right. So he gets up, he gets bundled up, he heads down to the barn, and he's halfway there and he sees a light on. And he says, well, I don't remember leaving that light on. And so he gets down there and what does he find? One of his employees couldn't sleep until he checked on things. Now, how much do we value that guy? A lot. And so that is when we say, you know what, I'm going to the National Cattlemen's Association meetings. I want you to go with me. Does that mean something to that person? You bet. That person has a career at that point because my employer is taking the time to make an investment in me. Let's go up to K-State campus and go to Cattlemen's Day. Let's go to this conference. Let's hear, here's 2 tickets to a football game for you and your wife. I wanted you to know I appreciate you. That's the difference between a bonus. Okay, that is wrapping my presentation up, and I want to have some time for some questions. Who's got questions? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm sorry?
Job description. I'm older than that girl said 25, 30 years ago. Definitely was recommended. But it turned out to be possibly more valuable to attorneys than the current employee. So then they said, we don't want anything. Now we're back to the employee placement. But then it's pretty broad. It's going to be jailed. You're going to have people that are setting out and saying, that's not good.
And that is a complaint I hear quite frequently. People say, oh, I'm not going to write a job description because I don't want anyone coming to me saying, I'm not going to do that because it's not in my job description. Well, first of all, we need to remember the fact that job descriptions aren't written in stone. They change. They modify. They work with the employer and with the employee. Second thing we've got to remember there is I think in that situation, we don't have a job description problem. We've got a general morale problem. That's a symptom of something much, much bigger within our work culture. And so remember, job descriptions are just one more way of communicating what I expect from you, what you can expect from me. Thank you for pointing that out. There was another one right here somewhere. Yes, ma'am.
Would you kind of go through what's legal and not? I mean, you make a comment about the gender reference. What's legal and what's not legal when you interview somebody?
Very good, and I wish I'd pointed that out. Thank you for bringing that up. This is a very common question and a very good question. When you are in the process of selecting an employee, select based totally on things that pertain to the job. If it doesn't pertain to the job, don't ask about it. For example, ma'am, are you religious? Do you go to church? Okay, but you could sue me for asking that. Because that's none of my business. What I can ask, however, is, would you have a problem working Sundays? That's the question. And so don't say, do you have kids? Say, A lot of times our work is very seasonal, and so we have to work well into the night and sometimes on weekends, causing you to miss any types of family or extracurricular activities, but that's just very limited, but it will happen from time to time. Would that be a problem for you? That pertains to the job. Do you have kids pertains to their home life? And so that's a different thing. Correct? Another thing to keep in mind there is we also have an obligation to ask to protect us from lawsuits, not from employer, from the employee. But let's say I hire somebody and I don't ask about their driving record if one of their job requirements is to drive. And then that person gets into an accident in a farm vehicle and kills somebody. And then all of a sudden I'm especially liable because I put this person who has, you know, 5 drunk driving convictions in one of my vehicles to drive for me. And so always tie it back to the job itself. And so we want to avoid things about religion, race, age also. Don't ask somebody how old they are. Ask them, can you lift a 50-pound sack of feed? And so always tie it back to the job. That's an excellent, excellent question. Thank you for asking that. Other questions? Yes, sir.
I just shared we use a consulting service.
Mm-hmm.
And they evaluate our employees twice a year.
Uh-huh.
That was money for us.
Great. And that's the gentleman is, it says he uses a consulting service to evaluate the employees. And I can see one huge benefit from that, and that's because I always advise employers to get feedback on their own performance from the employees. But they say, my employees won't tell me if I'm doing a bad job. They don't want to hurt my feelings. They don't want to make me mad. But they will tell a third party. And so if you can use a service like that, if you've got a consulting veterinarian or somebody who's frequently on your business, have them do it and keep it confidential or something. But do encourage those employees to give you feedback as well. And that's going to be a little more difficult type of thing. But I think it's worth it. Other questions? Yes, sir. The status on references being sued, you're exactly right. Many businesses, particularly a larger business, will actually have a policy where they don't give references. There have also been situations where employees will have friends or buddies call posing as an employer to find out what their references are saying about them. And they may sue or they may get mad or you may just have all kinds of trouble. And so I think it's key on that if we do give references, we keep it pertaining to things that we have documented about the job. I let this person go because they were frequently late, and I've got the documentation to back it up, or something like that. If you decide to personally adopt a I will refuse to give references policy, I will not say that's a bad idea. But when you do call people to get references, you can kind of read between the lines. And if they're really, really reluctant to give something, people usually aren't hesitant to give a good reference. But if they're really, really hesitant to give a reference, usually that's a pretty good indication there's not that much good to say. Yes, sir.
We use one thing, and it's probably risky. We will pay our employees $500. They will refer to another good employee, but when we take on that employee, always with the stipulation that for 3 weeks is our interview time.
Yeah.
So that on the job, I'm sure the employee is a different family.
That's right. The gentleman has raised another wonderful point that I wish I'd remembered to mention during my presentation, and that is the practice of actually encouraging or offering a bonus or a prize, kind of, if you will, to your current employees for referring new employees to you. I can think of many, many benefits of that. Number one, if you've got a great employee, what are the odds that he's going to hang out with people who would be other good employees? Those are the people in his bowling league and in his elk club and what have you. And so also, are your good employees going to bring you a loser to work for you? Because they don't want to take up his slack all day long. So they're probably going to refer to you people who they think would be pretty good employees. So that's a good first hurdle right there. Also, those employees, your employees are your best ambassadors. And I don't know how many of you think about it this way or not, but your employees are very, very much your ambassadors in your community. They are your best recruitment tool, whether you're paying them to do it or not. So get them a hat, get them a jacket with a logo on it, do those types of things, because you want people saying, hey, I didn't know you worked for so-and-so, how's it like working out there? Oh, they're great, they're the best place I've ever worked for. Really, are they hiring? Yeah, we might be hiring in a couple months. Well, keep me in mind if you do. That's what we're really aiming for. If we do that, we have a lot better success at hiring people that are going to stick around. Okay, that is our time. Oh, I'm sorry, one last question.
I want to get a different viewpoint of what's going on in the world and have real vacation.
Well, I think the problem with that is that some people just don't like vacation. I haven't taken one in years. And so it's, but I understand your perspective about wanting people to get away and to do something different for a while. If you've got somebody like that who you think could really use a weekend away from the operation, I think sending them to a conference or doing something like that to get them out of town can be a big, big benefit. Take them to your local university for Cattleman's Day or something and just get them off the place for a while. Because it would be a little bit of a problem, but I don't think you can really force a person to go because, frankly, a lot of our employees don't have the disposable income to really, truly get away. I don't know about your situation, but I know a lot of the employees that I've seen and worked with, they're a lot of them, sadly, are kind of in a paycheck-to-paycheck kind of situation. So, sorry. Oh.